You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Also breaking tonight, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has not faced many questions about the number of nursing home deaths in his state or the order he signed to put infected COVID patients in those homes. But over months, when he has been asked, the governor shifted blame as his answers evolved.
I would take all of these numbers now with a grain of salt. What does a presumed death mean, right? We presume it. How do you presume it to be coronavirus?
The conspiracy they're trying to spread just has no factual basis. But yes, people in nursing homes died, and they're playing politics with the issue.
Incompetent government kills people. More people died than needed to die in COVID. That's the truth.
That's the truth. Those are the words of Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York. This is January 29th, 2021. We're going to get into a lot more detail of what the governor knew and was hiding from the public regarding nursing homes where numerous deaths were occurring. It's a massive cover-up. How deep it goes, well, you have to start at the top, do you not? I mean, here was a guy who was overseeing the state and even wrote a book, in the midst of the COVID crisis, talking about how great he had worked to contain it. Yes, a book he released on April 21, or around that time, talking about how great he was doing. And at the same time, blaming any failures upon Donald Trump. And remember, Andrew Cuomo even got an Emmy Award because he was praised for his briefings in the early stages of the pandemic, a tough demeanor, an effort to speak the truth, they say, in stark contrast to President Trump. It is funny, and then again, it's not, because of those who died, because Cuomo ordered nursing homes to keep COVID-19 patients. If they sent them to the hospital, the hospital would send them back to the nursing home, and they had to take them back again. And Cuomo is once again dancing around as to, well, did they die in the nursing home or the hospital? I mean, like he was saying, what's a presumed COVID death? Well, we know many cases probably have been mislabeled anyway. We're going to get into that in great detail before we wrap up the next 2 hours. By the way, I have to ask you, do you have your vaccine? Do you want to get a vaccine? Are you in line to get a vaccine? Have you signed up somewhere for a vaccine? Are you being told there's not enough vaccine for you? The government is getting ready to give COVID vaccine to terrorists. To terrorists. Our government going to be giving COVID vaccine to Gitmo inmates. Those being held in Gitmo, most of them suspected terrorists. They're going to get their vaccine before you get yours. And this, of course, is a time to focus on right to life. The march has to be held virtually this year because of the pandemic, which makes the left extremely happy. And for one thing, it doesn't put more pressure on Biden out in the streets of D.C. Biden, who was all for the Hyde Amendment, to not let federal dollars go to pay for abortions until he wasn't. And he changed his mind just so he could get votes. James Herson, we often have on this program from time to time. James does a lot of reporting for Newsmax and from the West Coast. He put up a cartoon. I'm not sure the origin of it, but I had to quote James as putting it up. It shows Biden saying, "I'm for the little guy," in one panel. And the panel right next to it shows a fetus saying, how little? How little? We're going to be joined by Joshua Mitchell later, Georgetown political science professor, on identity politics, a new book he has out, and how we are all wrapped up in identity politics. Also, proof that AOC is really a capitalist. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she is a capitalist. She may talk socialism, but we have more and more proof this woman is all about the money. Now, she won't say that to you because she's wanting socialism, but she's a capitalist. Oh, and then a warning from someone we consider, what, a big voice, a little voice, an indifferent voice, John Kerry. We only had 9 years left to save the planet. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be 2, 3, maybe 4 times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beale Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
And we're down, we go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
This is an incredible example of how far to the left the Democrat Party has gone. I was at the inauguration last Wednesday where President Biden gave a speech about unity and moving our country, bringing our country together and moving our country forward. There's nothing unifying about doing away with something that's been bipartisan for 45 years. Every Democrat president since Jimmy Carter, even Joe Biden himself as recently as 2019, supported the Hyde Amendment, which blocks your taxpayer dollars to go toward funding abortion.
That was then, this is now. 2019, Joe Biden was still running for the White House. What would make a man change such a fundamental principle that involved life or death, except for the golden ring to grab for the White House? Those are the words of Congressman Jim Banks, Republican of Indiana, saying that this is amazing. He said how far we've gone with the left already. Every president has previously backed the Hyde Amendment, which prevents federal dollars from being spent for abortions. Just yesterday, Biden signed off on the Mexico plan. The Mexico-funded plan. You know what that does? It allows U.S. taxpayer dollars to be sent to organizations that both promote and provide abortions in developing countries. The Mexico City policy was a life-saving policy, according to the U.S. Bishops' Conference, and they are now condemning President Biden's reinstatement of taxpayer-funded abortions around the world with these statements. It is grievous that one of President Biden's first official acts actively promotes the destruction of human lives in developing nations. It's antithetical to reason, violates human dignity, incompatible with Catholic teaching. It's incompatible with Joe Biden's religion, being a Catholic, but he's already signed off on that he will make the deal, sell his soul, if he can become president. And that's when 2019, when he did still oppose, or rather support the Hyde Amendment, realizing I can't continue to do that if I'm going to get elected. And now with Kamala Harris as the VP, we have the most pro-abortion administration we probably have ever had. The 2021 March for Life kicked off today, mostly virtually. It's all, of course, about supporting abortion life, saving life, and anti-abortion. President Trump did get conservative Justice Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. That in itself should suggest there will be more belief in protecting the sanctity of life. In fact, the president of the National Right to Life Committee says when we have a pro-life administration, we're marching to encourage them and show support. When we have a pro-abortion administration like we currently have, we need to march to let them know we are not going away. President Trump last year attended the March for Life. He became the first president in history, to join the actual protest march. He spoke to the thousands of marchers who gathered on the National Mall for that event. And he was called in his administration consistent champions of the March for Life movement. But he's the only one who went that far to actually appear in front of them. He had previously addressed the crowd on the March for Life event by satellite. Former President George W. Bush had also done that remotely when in office. But right now we have Joe Biden moving forward with the executive order revoking the pro-life policy, the Mexico City policy, dismissing consistent polling that shows Americans have bipartisan unity. When he wants unity, here's where your unity is, bipartisan unity to bar taxpayer funding of abortions both within the U.S. and abroad. Did it make any difference at this point? No, because now he's already elected. And he got elected on the basis that we're going to continue to ramp up abortions. Let me give you some of these surveys here. A Knights of Columbus Marist poll found that 77% of Americans, 77% of Americans, either oppose or strongly oppose using taxpayer funds for abortions overseas. Now, of those for funding abortions against taxpayer funding abroad, 95% are Republicans, 85% describe themselves as independents, 55% describe themselves as Democrats, who do not believe we should be using U.S. taxpayer dollars to fund abortions in other countries. Now, when you look within the U.S., a Marist poll found that more than three-fourths of Americans, 76%, back significant restrictions on abortion, including a majority who identify as pro-choice. They still believe there should be some restrictions. What we have states doing in some cases is allowing abortion at the moment of birth. The mother can decide, I don't want the baby, I don't know if I can afford to pay for a baby and my cable TV, and I don't want it. That sounds crass, doesn't it? Well, it is. It should be right in your face, so it's to what's at stake. how many millions of lives that might have changed our world, maybe found world peace, cured cancer, dealt with some of the issues we are having now, maybe even climate change in a way that it could be done effectively without crippling everyone. How many never were born because this all-out push, it's a woman's choice? And I always come back to the same basic line. You can say it's your choice, but if your mother had made the same choice, you wouldn't be here to argue the point. And, of course, the media, for the most part, is going to ignore the March for Life in the past anyway. And certainly now that it's a virtual, they're going to do everything they can to look away. Ignore it. Katie Yoder is a media research employee, media research center employee. She wrote a piece that appeared in townhall.com. saying the largest gathering of pro-life people worldwide doesn't get the media attention it deserves. And says since 2013, broadcast networks have spent less than a half an hour in total on the March for Life. In total, since 2013. Here's how that's broken out by a study done by a media group. Broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, the time, the morning they spent on evening shows or morning shows over the last 8 years. 8 years of the March for Life, and here's what three networks gave it. In 2013, 17 seconds total. 2014, 46 seconds. 2015, back to 15 seconds. 2016, 35 seconds. 2017, they actually spent 21 minutes and 52 seconds on the March for Life. That was, of course, after Trump had come into office. That doesn't mean it was all favorable. It was just means that they were doing stories on it. 2018, 3 minutes, 46 seconds. 2019, 58 seconds. Last year, 28 seconds. They come from the numbers from the Media Research Center and Newsbusters. So for looking back to 2013, a total of 28 minutes and 57 seconds. As she points out in her piece, there have been more generous coverage to other events such as the Women's March, or she says even baby pandas. Baby pandas, so cute. Let's give them all kinds of coverage. Babies in the womb, not that important. You heard a moment ago the remarks from Congressman Jim Banks, Republican of Indiana, talking about how far the left has moved. He drafted a letter and put it around and offering it to every congressional leader for every member of Congress, including Democrats, to sign it, a pledge that they would protect the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment again, not allowing federal dollars for abortions in our nation. Now, granted, Planned Parenthood and so forth get around that by they take the money not actually for the abortion, but for utilities or equipment or to pay staff or to do campaigns. Hyde Amendment just makes sure it doesn't go specifically for the abortion. So again, Republican Study Committee Chairman, Congressman Jim Banks, Republican of Indiana, took this letter around asking for signatures from every member of Congress. 435 members. What did he get?
199 of my colleagues joined me in signing. Almost every single Republican in the House signed this letter. That I invited Democrats to sign it, too. And not a single Democrat would put their name on a bill that would draw a line in the sand and say that we will not support any spending measure that does away with the Hyde Amendment, which has been bipartisan for decades. And today, this is the difference of where we are today versus just a few years ago. Today, not a single Democrat would sign their name to a pro-life letter like this one.
That's where we are today. And again, mainly it's because we have an administration now that is ready for a full assault on unborn babies. They will cry out at Planned Parenthood, we care about women's health. We're here for women's health. And in many cases, the Planned Parenthood centers don't even have a mammogram available machine to do that, because they're not so much about that. They're more about abortion. And there are numerous other clinics, publicly funded clinics, that do indeed provide women's health. They just don't give abortions. I wanted to spend a lot of time on this because it's appalling when I look around at how it's being covered in general and has been over the last few years, as pointed out by Katie Yoder at townhall.com. And while we argue, more babies are sacrificed. Take a break, and when we come back, how we continue to face identity culture and cancel culture. You could be the next target, you know. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Well, the censorship continues, and I'll remind you, censorship under any other name is still censorship. When they shut down President Trump's Twitter account, Facebook account, and even the White House accounts at that time, you can say, and I would agree, that Google and Facebook and Twitter are private entities, so it's not government censorship, no, but again, by any name, censorship is still censorship. And of course, they continue to target conservative voices. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, on his YouTube channel, he put up comments from a Senate hearing on coronavirus treatments. Now, this included a doctor testifying about the use of a medicine, ivermectin, in cases of the Chinese virus. The doctor was saying that this can be a help in some cases, and so it's going to be used and probably is a good way to maybe help some people. But YouTube decided to take it down. The senator said on Twitter, before they haven't shut that down yet, Google's YouTube removed two videos of doctors testifying under oath at my U.S. Senate hearing on early treatment of COVID. Another body blow to freedom of speech and expression. Apparently, the doctors at Google know more about practicing medicine than heroic doctors who have the courage and compassion to actually treat COVID patients and save lives. Well, YouTube says the videos violated our policies on COVID-19. YouTube stating we don't allow claims that contradict local health authorities' medical information about COVID-19 to include guidance on treatment, prevention, or transmission guidance. Then what the hell are they doing now with Fauci? Fauci says you don't need a mask. Oh, you do need a mask. You don't need one. Now you need two. You can open the schools. No, you can't open schools. Now you can't open the schools. And that's contrary to the Biden administration right now. And Facebook decides no more ads to recall Gavin Newsom in L.A. Nope, they're going to shut it down. They just want to shut it down. They're no longer going to allow, I said in L.A., I'm actually talking about across the state, no more Gavin Newsom ads to say, come together, let's sign a petition and recall him. So Facebook is saying those kinds of ads and so forth on recalling Newsom, they could lead to violence. All it is a recall petition. Ads trying to say, make sure you sign, get involved if you want to change how Newsom is running things. And now Facebook decides, no, that's almost treacherous. A recall petition, a fundamental right of American citizens, not in the world of Facebook, Google apparently, Twitter, and the rest of them. Anything they decide they don't like, they cancel. We'll see if this program gets to stay on. We'll take a break when we come back. Going to be joined by a Georgetown professor of political science and about identity politics, how we are being locked down, described, maybe even cursed by identity politics.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
You should have closed your windows and got another dog. You should have chained up all the doors and switched up all the locks. And how many times have I prayed?
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, we're in the process. Apparently, we're having trouble making contacts with Joshua Mitchell, the author of a new book, American Awakening. He is a professor of political philosophy or science, I can't quite tell, maybe both, at Georgetown University. Numerous articles, journal articles, four books. But the whole gist of his book does bear attention, American Awakening, dealing with identity, politics, and other afflictions of our time. And by that, he's talking about we have identity politics, we pretty much know what that is, and then we also have bipolarity and addiction. He does agree that identity politics is a more imminent threat, but we also have to understand the other two. Now, I'm going to give you a brief of some of what he said here, because I think it's worth noting, even if I don't have him to flesh some of it out. They are talking about, as he sees it, America has always been committed to the idea that we can work together to build a common world. I think that's true. We have done that in the past. We can, we will. And generally, and some of this not mentioned to my knowledge in his book, but generally, unfortunately, sometimes it takes a crisis to bring America together. 9/11. I mean, the nation was galvanized. Yes, there were pockets here and there that thought it was a great thing and were celebrating. But for the most part, Americans came together. Pearl Harbor, when that happened, obviously, that brought the nation together. We tend to, at cases like that, try to come together. We did in the beginning of COVID. We weren't sure what we were dealing with. Information was confusing, misleading, in some extent, and the World Health Organization was not doing its job to keep us fully posted on what the real story was. And China was lying to us and lying to the World Health Organization. I can't put all the blame on the World Health Organization, but they obviously were not doing their job correctly. But again, pardon me, for that period of time, we were together. Okay, we got to deal with it, see what we do. And then became the mask and the lockdowns. We have now reached a point where many are saying, enough. The restrictions are onerous, not necessary, and over the board. And in particular, when it comes to getting kids back to school. Let me give you a background here moment. Reference Chicago. Andrew, our boots-on-the-ground reporter in Chicago, had sent me this, and I was going to actually use it in the next hour, but let me get to it here. We've got the teachers' union in Chicago saying they can't go to work. We have him now? He's calling us. All right. I'll just give you a brief. We'll have this in more detail in the next hour. The teachers' union president, along with his staff, is saying, we're not going to go to work. Teachers are afraid to go to work. Fauci has said repeatedly, it's safe to open the schools. But they haven't done it, and apparently are not going to do it. Why? Well, because it's politics in play. Union politics at that point. And again, the children are the pawns. All right, we'll get back to our topic here, and we have a limited amount of time now, but we want to welcome Joshua Mitchell, professor at Georgetown University, in the new book, American Awakening. Glad to have you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. I spent some time on some of your issues, and of course now we're shorter time, but I was basically starting with your point that we've always been committed to the idea that we can work together to build a common world, but identity politics now separates and divides us so much. What do you say?
Yeah. This is the problem now. Instead of looking at each other as possible, you know, people we can build a world together with, we look at each other as members of an identity category, and it's worse than that. Each of these identity categories has a certain kind of moral value to it. Some of them are pure and some of them are stained, and you can't build a world together when you're thinking about purity and stain.
Well, of course, depending on which side you're on, it's the other side that's impure. I am pure, not those guys.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think both sides play this to some extent. But I do worry that this is largely on the left these days. You know, conservatives have talked for a long time about the need to build a world together. There's the demonification that happens in everyday politics, I understand. But as a kind of political program, I think the left is the one that's moving in this direction. I see this in the universities where I'm teaching.
You know what? I was going to bring that up, and I will reemphasize to the public, the listeners, you are at Georgetown University. How does that kind of statement from you fly with your other professors at Georgetown University?
Well, I think it's a problem at Georgetown. It's not quite as bad as it is in some other places, but it's also quite clear that there's an agenda. The kind of social justice agenda, which is very much concerned with erasing anything that's not concerned with social justice and focusing expressly on the innocent ones, the wounded victims. And that seems to be the primary purpose of a college education these days, is to learn the vocabulary on the basis of which you can point out other people's stains.
Ah, you have to do that and also find some support that you are a victim and you need to be repatriated in some way.
Yeah. Well, this is
reparations,
also, by
the way, I should say. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, there's, you know, I think there's something called woke capitalism, which I'm sure you've heard about. The idea is you have all these very wealthy corporations, and they don't want to pay attention to the fact that they've got lots of money, and so they demonstrate that they're, you know, one of us, one of the good guys, by committing themselves to woke social justice causes. This is, I think, you see this everywhere now. People have to show themselves to be committed to a social justice cause. And if they don't do that, they're considered to be one of the deplorables or one of the irredeemably stained ones.
Help me quickly understand the bipolar issue you say that is existing.
Well, I mean, here's what's curious in America. I mean, forgetting the medical understanding of bipolarity, let's just do this socially. What's really curious, I'll talk about this in the context of students, is that, you know, you go to a high school graduation or a college graduation, and you hear these young kids getting up on stage and saying, we're going to change the world, you know, as if they're the most important things in the world. And then the COVID-19 pandemic comes along, and somebody gives an order, you know, to give up on your life and not even question anything, and they completely bow down. And so there's a kind of oscillation going on back and forth between feeling so empowered that you're the most important thing in the world and yet feeling utterly impotent. The phrase I use is management society and selfie man. We've got tens of millions of people in America taking selfies themselves, and yet they don't believe they can build a world together. They have to hand everything up to big government or corporations or to transnational organizations.
That's a good point. One other thing I want to touch on before we run out of time, you say there's a disease that Americans have that you can't quite name, but you characterize it by an addiction.
Yeah. So I link opioid addiction, Facebook, and a whole bunch of other things together. My argument is that, Facebook, for example, let's use that one. Facebook friends are supplements to real friendship, and real friendship takes a lot of work, and it's always local. And you can have Facebook friends if you know what friendship is. But the disease here is that we're giving up on the really hard work of friendship, and we're trying to satisfy ourselves with Facebook social media friendships. And, of course, it can't satisfy. We feel empty. I think the same is true of online shopping, by the way. Everybody orders stuff from Amazon, but we're giving up on our local communities. We ultimately have to live in these embedded lives. We have to learn the hard lessons of what friendship and shopping is. And it's not easy to do, but we're trying to find shortcuts, and we're getting a high from it. We're getting a high from it, but we're not getting satisfied. So we're turning what should be a supplement into a substitute. Facebook friendship can be a supplement, but it can't be a substitute, and that's the problem.
And to that extent, I mean, the Internet has really helped with the COVID issue, lockdowns. I mean, folks have been able to, because we now have such broadband Internet available, they can do work from home as before they didn't. And companies realizing we don't need all this office space, and others are saying, now, there's a lot we don't need. But in the end, it has been used as a tool to further lock us down.
So I completely agree. Look, the great dream here is that we don't need to live in a world of time and place, and the digital world makes that promise. We don't need businesses, real-life, brick-and-life-mortar businesses. We don't need real communities. This is the bet that the whole of modern civilization is making, both in America and China, that we can live digitally. This is a terrible, terrible mistake. We can't be happy unless we live in local communities in embodied lives, and that's what we have to push back against.
And if you're slave to that attitude of the Internet, then again, what identity do you have left?
This is when you are completely have nothing real. When you start inventing an identity on it because you're safe within your own little Facebook sovereign world. My argument is one of the ways to tone down this identity politics madness is to get people engaged with their neighbors. Maybe they don't know who they are. Maybe they don't know who their neighbor is.
Yeah.
And instead of just declaring that I'm this or that, maybe we ought to sit down and listen to one another.
Good idea. Thank you very much for your time. I'm sorry we got the connection established late. Joshua Mitchell, American Awakening. American Awakening is the book. Thank you very much, sir. You bet. When we come back, speaking of what's coming, a warning, we have 9 years left. So says John Kerry. 9 years left before the world is what?
Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
In fact, I would say that in my judgment, it is the last best chance the world has to come together in order to do the things we need to do to avoid the worst consequences of the climate crisis. We were told that 3 years ago, we were told we have 12 years to avoid those consequences. 3 of those years were lost because we had Donald Trump, who didn't believe in any of it. And now we have 9 years left to try to do what science is telling us we need to do.
So says John Kerry, the U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Climate. He's talking about the conference coming up in 26 in Glasgow, Scotland. Saying it's going to be extremely important. It's going to be our last chance to avoid the worst consequences of the climate crisis. We've got 9 years. And he says even Biden knows that the Paris Agreement isn't enough. And here's something Kerry adds that really isn't getting that much attention. He said we, the U.S., could go to zero tomorrow and we wouldn't be able to solve the climate change issue. You hear that? For everything they want to force on you, shutting down pipeline, oil and gas leases and so forth, if we were at zero tomorrow, it still wouldn't solve it, because he acknowledges not when almost 90% of the planet's global emissions come from outside U.S. borders. And China, of course, being the second major polluter, if not the first, I should say, and we're behind them. I think China was at 30%, we're at 15%. Some of the numbers I had yesterday, I have to admit, they're scrambled in my head. But the bottom line is, you got other countries that are doing it, and they're not going to be pulling back at all. Well, we might think they will. We might sign something like the Iran deal that Obama did and say, oh, I'm sure they'll abide by it. Wink, wink. Yeah, I'm sure they will. And China still isn't really letting us know exactly what happened at their Wuhan labs and how COVID suddenly surfaced and how it then spread. And here's something else. A Chinese company in the beginning of this pandemic had actually offered to build COVID-19 testing labs in our nation. The BGI Group, touted as the largest biotech firm in the world, was going to build and run testing labs in Washington, New York, California, and other states. The then director of the National Counterintel and Security Center warned the states, you don't want to do that. He said they can collect, store, and exploit biometric information from these COVID tests. We've already heard previously from Gordon G. Chang, an expert on China, that China has the largest collection of DNA than anyone in the world. For what purpose? Maybe develop bioweapons targeting a specific ethnic group? The previous director of the National Counterintel Security Center, talking about China offering to build these testing labs here in the U.S., he said, quote, it shows the nefarious mindset of the Communist Party of China to take advantage of a worldwide crisis like COVID. He said, then we put out an advisory to not only every American, but to hospitals, associations, and clinics. And yet, we still have China deeply in the midst of all of this. And, of course, Governor Cuomo has got some explaining to do as to what's been happening up there. And we're going to get into that in the next segment. Oh, by the way, Joe Biden again, deciding I'm not going to wear the mask while I'm in the Oval Office. He signed the order the other day, executive order, if you're on federal property, you have to wear a mask. And when he was writing out that executive order, signing it, he wore a mask. But then he decided to not wear the mask. So everybody's asking, well, what's the rule? Do you wear it or do you not wear it? Because routinely, the White House Press Secretary Psaki and Dr. Fauci, Susan Rice, and others have routinely removed their mask before speaking at the podium in the briefing room. And actually, I'm in favor of that. Rather, are you ordering fries or what are you ordering? I don't know what you're saying. So I'd rather them not have the mask. But again, that tells you again a mandate that's just issued because he could. Oh, Biden might not know he's president, because as he was signing some executive orders yesterday, he said the second order I'm going to be signing also changes what the president has done. The former president. Yeah, he was talking about Trump, but he called him the president. And again, he stated a little bit later, I'm not initiating any new law, any new aspect of the law. This is going back to what the situation was prior to the president's executive orders. Sir, you're the president now. Oh, yeah, I meant Trump, President Trump. But every time you say the president, are you talking about yourself or Trump? Does he know? Does Joe know that he's been elected president? Oh, I could see all of Kamala and the rest of them gathering all these little details of things like that and saying, get the 25th Amendment ready. I think you're going to be in the White House, Kamala, a lot quicker than what we might have thought. Coming up in the next hour, yes, Cuomo, how are you going to answer the lies about the nursing home deaths? And I'm going to tell you about the time U.S. veterans attacked our Capitol, a piece of history that many don't know. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.